Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain, where we lift the curtain on politics and theater. You know, two areas a lot of people think don't ever meet, but here they do. As the political analyst for WGN-TV and host of CLTV's Politics Tonight and Broadway in Chicago Backstage on the Comcast Network, we'll touch on everything from national, international, state, and local politics to the artistic side of our city. We're going to feature the hottest shows and theaters because when it comes to theater, New York, watch your back. Chicago gets it right. Plus, we'll look at other social and legal issues of interest to you each week, hoping to spark a little interest, ensure meaning towards the bigger picture, and maybe even spread some knowledge along the way. Get ready, everybody. We're going to raise the curtain. We're looking behind and underneath the scenes. Let's get to it. Well, depending on your age, you may not remember that if you live in the city of Chicago, you actually used to vote for members of the school board. That ended in 1995 when Mayor Richard M. Daley seemingly decided things would be better if he appointed the school board. You can give meaning to that however you want, but the bottom line is for over 20 years, that's how the school board gets around here. They get appointed by the mayor and only by the mayor. Well, it's been frustrating for a lot of citizens through the years. There have been efforts to try and change it. We're going to clarify all of that with you because now at the helm of that effort, which gives it a little more credibility, I think, to perhaps have something happen, is the former governor of the state of Illinois, Pat Quinn, and he's joining me now. Governor, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks a lot, Paul. And it really is a fundamental issue for all of us who live in Chicago. I live in the west side of Chicago, and I actually ran for the local school council in 1989. I got elected from the community, and there was at least some opportunity for people to vote on people, having something to do with education. But as you point out, the school board itself that runs the whole system is appointed by the mayor, not elected. And every other school district in the state, I think there's like 846 other districts, they're all elected by the voters and taxpayers, except here in Chicago.
And it actually may be more than that. I think the number might be 859. So just to add to your argument. Well, so now look, you're a Democrat. Rahm Emanuel's a Democrat. Mayor Daley was a Democrat. So this isn't a partisan issue because you're not going after a Republican with this. What have you been happy about with the performance of democratically appointed school board members?
Well, for the last 20 years in particular, the school board has mismanaged one thing after another. You know, they hired a corrupt school superintendent, Barbara Bird Bennett. Then also, they've levied $11 billion in property taxes over the last 5 years alone. And voters should have an opportunity to review their work, just like they do in Oak Park or Evanston or Oak Lawn or any other town in Illinois. The voters ought to have a chance to have their say on who was on that board. The idea of just having one person, the mayor, with exclusive authority to appoint the school board members has really not had anything positive for school children. And that's why voters ought to have an opportunity to take charge.
Now, I think you'd rather not be going to court. And I kind of said in the tease into you, there have been efforts to make this change. And you know what they are. Fill in our listeners to they tried to change it in the city council world. They tried to change it in the legislature world through referendum. What has happened? And yet we still find ourselves in this place.
Well, we've had local referendums in wards all across Chicago, and each and every one of these referendums, 90% of the voters, the people who pay the taxes, vote in favor of an elected school board. And so then a bill was introduced in Springfield in the House of Representatives, that bill passed the House, but it's sitting in the Senate, has been called, and the legislative session is nearing its end. So, with a group of others, we decided to file a lawsuit both in federal and state court. In federal court, it's a voting rights case saying that why do Chicago people, the people of our city, be treated as second-class citizens? We should have the same voting rights as folks who live in other parts of Illinois, the right to vote on an elected school board and members of a school board. And then also in state court, we have filed a lawsuit. I'm one of the plaintiffs, saying that, gee, we're paying all these taxes, And our whole country began with a revolt against King George and his system of taxation without representation. Well, that's exactly what we have here in Chicago. We don't get to vote on any of the people who are raising property taxes to the limit on hardworking people. And so that's another reason to ask the court to order next April, when the school board members are elected across Illinois, to order that the Chicago have an elected school board, and let's get this thing resolved.
You were governor of this state for quite a while, so you've got all the connections anybody could possibly have. As you just said, it passed the House, the bill to change this, but it hasn't been called in the Senate. My guess is you've got Senate President John Cullerton right on your cell phone there. Have you made the effort to call him and say, John, let's go?
Well, John is very close to the mayor, and I know John can get along with everybody. And I was happy to see that the House passed an elected school board for Chicago. When I was governor, the Speaker of the House wasn't for that, but I think he saw that the referendums were a pretty clear indication of where the voters are. The idea of having one of the most important things government does, educating our children, educating the next generation, that all those individuals who are appointed, who frankly in the last 20 years in Chicago have not done a good job, they've mismanaged the Chicago public school system, then it's time to have a new system. And I hope John Cullerton, the Senate President, will let the bill be voted on. And we hope the mayor finally agrees that the elected school board is a heck of a lot better than what we got now.
I think you definitely trust the voters when they're placing their votes for offices like governor or, the state offices, controller, whatever it may be. But when you're voting for school board, to me, governor, that is almost akin to people voting for judges or water water reclamation district. But it's that level that people don't really know who they're talking about. They start to pick names based on gender or religion or ethnicity just to try and get people who are like themselves. I don't mean that in any negative way. It's the comfort zone for people because they don't know who these people are who are running for school board. How would you combat that if this passes?
Well, I think in a big city like Chicago, if you had districts, that allows people within a district to evaluate the candidates who are running for the school board. And I think voters do take an active interest in who's on something like a board that levies so much in property taxes. If you look at your property tax bill, much of it is devoted to education. And having the opportunity to vote for those who are running the educational system, I think voters will pay attention to that, contrary maybe to some of these other offices. What we look at around the state, in other towns, school board elections are very spirited, and people do educate themselves on who's on what side, and I think that's healthy. The whole idea of democracy as we approach a presidential election here on November 8th, it's important that, we always put as much power as possible in the hands of everyday people, the voters, strengthen their power. And an elected school board gives voters the opportunity to really evaluate those who are going to run our educational system for years to come.
So as you know, we dodged a bullet in this city. There won't be a teacher's strike. We should be safe for a few years. There was a teacher's strike during your tenure, so you lived through one of these, so I'm sure you're happy about that. My question is, we saw the bows being taken by union leadership, by the mayor, Forrest Claypool. So my question is, if this were an elected school board, how would that influence the power of the mayor? It looked like he was the one that's sitting at the negotiating table, maybe, striking the final deal of what was going to happen economically.
Well, I think that the mayor listened better this time. I know when I was governor, I encouraged him to sit down with Karen Lewis and have a respectful conversation. He really didn't take my advice on that, and it was a disaster, obviously, with the strike and all the bad feeling. Hopefully things are going in a better direction, but I think it's always better for the taxpayers that those who are levying property taxes, and right now, under the system, the only ones who are able to levy property taxes in Chicago for elementary and secondary education are the appointed school board members of the mayor. And I don't think that's a healthy system for taxpayers or voters. And I think it's better to have more voices that are elected by the people rather than just one boss.
A lot of people get frustrated, Governor, because, you've pushed for term limits on the mayor, but there's been a push for term limits in general in this state. Mm-hmm. It gets stopped. The legislation doesn't want to deal with it. Redistricting, the courts stop it. Nobody. The point is, people think that this state is run not even by the current governor, but by Speaker Mike Madigan. And so the bottom line is, can anything that is a major change like this get accomplished without Speaker Madigan basically giving his approval?
Well, as you know, Paul, I believe in petition and referendum, and we have set up some important reforms by that means, going around the Speaker of the House and the governor and the mayor. We set up the Citizen Utility Board that way. It's Illinois' largest consumer group. And we also reduced the size of the legislature. The cutback amendment that I helped organize was done around the insiders, and the people themselves reduced the size of the legislature and abolished the jobs of 59 politicians. And I think on the matter of redistricting, you could put a binding referendum on the statewide ballot that would be constitutional, that the courts would put on the ballot or allow to be on the ballot, and the voters, I think, would vote for that. And we ought to try that next time in 2018. Same way, you mentioned term limits on the mayor. Every other big city in the country has term limits on their mayor. New York does, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Houston. Chicago is the only one of the top 10 cities in America in terms of population that doesn't term limit the mayor. So we're petitioning for that. We want to put it on the ballot in 2018 and let voters have a chance to vote in favor of term limits and go around the mayor, go around the city council and enact this for our city the way they have elsewhere.
You know, when you first left office, we didn't hear from you for a little bit, and then you've come back. I know you love musicals and theater, and so I have a song for a line from Hamilton in my head, which is Thomas Jefferson's Coming Home, and I keep thinking, Patrick Quinn, you can write that lyric, is coming home. My question is this referendum land for you for the next period of years? Are you looking ahead to saying, I need a return to the public stage? I want a return to the public stage.
Well, I'm back to the future. I started 40 years ago passing petitions for referendums on the ballot, and our very first petition drive ended the practice of legislators collecting their entire annual salary, all their money, on the first day of office. That was a practice for 100 years in Illinois, and our petition drive stopped that and got a law passed against that. So I really believe in the process. I think it's popping up all over the country at the city level, county level, state level, and we need to encourage more of it in Illinois. We have a referendum on the county ballot asking for the state of Illinois to enact an earned sick leave proposal where people who are working hard at least get a few days of sick leave in the course of a year. And it'll be on the ballot in Cook County asking the General Assembly to pass this law in Illinois as they have elsewhere. So I do believe the voice of the people oftentimes comes through referendum, and sometimes the only way you get reform, because the insiders don't want reform, is to go around them and to put it on the ballot and get it passed by the people. And so I'm going to be working on that for the time to come.
No matter how hard I try, I can't get you to get that to you. So when you do decide, if you do decide you're going to return to the public stage, come join me again, will you, so we can talk about that?
Well, I like always sitting with you, Paul. You're well-informed, and I enjoy your program, so I'll be happy to visit with you soon.
I thank you. And as a side issue, you are such a lover of the arts and a lover of animals and pets and shelters, and I love that about you because, you know, those are passions for me, too. So I thank you, Governor. Thank you very much.
You and everybody should try to see Hamilton if they can afford it. It's a great... And,
I got a little story to tell you
really
about that. I'll tell you about that some other time. But I know you. I'm sure you will be there at the opening.
Amen.
Thanks, Gov. Oh, it's hard to believe that we'll be voting for president oh so soon. But, you know, you want to educate yourself, obviously, about all the candidates as you place your votes. And so to assist you, perhaps on the Republican or Democratic side, depending on your point of view, there's a movie now in theaters across Chicagoland. It's called Clinton, Inc., subtitle Behind Closed Doors, The True Story of an American Dynasty. It's a look at the work and life of Hillary and Bill Clinton. It comes from the producer of the movie called 2016 Obama's America that was based on a bestseller. And joining me now to talk about this movie is the writer and director of Clinton, Inc., and that's Bill Baber. Bill, welcome to the podcast. I appreciate your time.
Paul, thanks for having me.
So I interviewed your colleague Doug Sain in the past on my Politics Tonight television show. And one of the first questions I said to him is, with a movie coming out so close to the election, Do you have an agenda? So I'll ask you that question.
The agenda was to make a good film that was interesting for folks. I hope we achieved it.
So it wasn't about influencing the vote.
What we tried to do was to get behind the scenes and the psychology of Bill and Hillary and tell the story as best we could. And people are going to look at that and make their own decision. It is certainly not a pro-Trump or pro-Hillary movie in any way. It is an accurate description, and you can make your own opinion after you see it.
Yeah, and I have seen it. I hadn't seen it when I talked to Doug, but I've seen it now, William. And so as I watched it, and it's well done, by the way, and so as somebody who directed this and wrote it, I congratulate you on that task.
Appreciate it.
Into it with an open mind, okay? But let me just say to you that I came out of the movie, because one of the things Doug said was, you might come out, if you're a Hillary lover, you're going to love her more. If you're a Trump lover, you'll hate her more. And is that your view, by the way? You agree with Doug?
Sure.
Okay. So I came out of it with no agenda, but I did feel it was easier for somebody who was not a fan of the Clintons to be more satisfied by the film. Maybe it's just because the presence of people like Dick Morris are just so powerful when you watch them in terms of what they say. But, you know, in many ways, when it talked about Hillary as you know, hungry for power and all the things that, you know, you might not have a lot of people even fight you about. They call her ruthless, phrases like, Stonewall's things. But I thought you could be talking about any politician who wants to be president. I mean, right? What's the difference? Who isn't that?
It's interesting. People come and watch the film and they impart their own sort of values and bias. And based on those values and bias, you'll see different things. For example, we show the past of how Bill and Hillary's marriage started and how it worked together. And they had some rough times in their marriage, like many of us do. And at times, Hillary stuck by her man. Okay, so people who look at that and say, hey, he philandered on her, he cheated, she should have left, think of Hillary in a lesser light, because that's their bias. On the other hand, people who value keeping your marriage together and keeping your family together and sticking it out even when your spouse is an idiot, look at Hillary and go, what a woman. She stuck by him. Same set of facts, depending on the bias and the life experiences of the viewer, they change. That's why, you know, a Hillary lover who values strength and commitment will see that in her. And a Hillary detractor who values political expediency will see that, too.
So,
and both are there. That's what makes her a fascinating character.
I agree with that. And as the writer and director, of course, if there is a vision that you have, it's going to show up in the film. So let me ask you, when you think of that relationship, do you view that relationship between Bill and Hillary Clinton, is it one of love? Is it one of convenience? Is it one of power through the years? How do you define it as you've now studied it?
It's definitely based on power, and it's based on love. It's based on both. They're not mutually exclusive. So let's talk about love first. They were infatuated with each other in college. They find each other fascinating. Their intellect, they love being with each other. Their skills are complementary. They've been together 40 years. That's hard to keep any two people together for 40 years. They're bonded by their common love for their daughter. So, yeah, definitely love. Now, let's talk about any marriage. If you can love your spouse and hate them. You can love them and want to hit them on the head with a frying pan. Okay, so it's not all roses and flowers, but do they love each other in the sense is, do they feel that other person helps complete them? Absolutely. But is it also power? Absolutely. If you look at their common set of skills, they need each other. Bill could not have been president without Hillary. And I can make a good argument that Hillary wouldn't be president if she didn't have Bill there. Their skills match each other. Bill is a naturally gifted politician, and we tried to show this in this. He's got some genetic he won the genetic lottery in a lot of ways, but he's unfocused, he's undisciplined. Mm-hmm. Hillary is the disciplined one, a hardworking one, the one who can focus them. They need each other. Without Hillary, Bill never would have got out of Arkansas.
Yeah, and in fact, actually, you even share some letters that she had written to him. You know, like there was a period when he was cheating even in their younger days, and she sort of says, you know, I know what's going on, I know what you're doing, but let's remember who kind of knows the script of life here. My words, not hers.
Yeah.
One of the things I found interesting, too, is that, you know, when you listen, it's no secret that Bill Clinton likes women and he's done these things, or we're not making that up. But, you know, she was, and you make the point in the movie, she was not about makeup and fancy clothes and what is the attraction? When they tell the story, and they both tell the same story, they're looking across the library at each other and staring at each other, and magic happens, and yet no makeup, no clothes. You're kind of wondering, what did Bill see?
Bill's self-aware enough to know he needs a partner that can do two things for him: focus him and challenge him intellectually. And Hillary does both of those. Hillary is self-aware enough to know that she needs a partner who can inspire people, who can emote and communicate the passion that she doesn't have. And Bill can do things in politics Hillary never could and still can't. And she loves that about him. And look, Bill can charm women. Bill's charmed Hillary. And she looks at him, and to this day, she thinks he's one of the most, if not the most fascinating person in the world. Has she been frustrated with him? Yes. Has he put their marriage in jeopardy many times? Yes. Has she wanted to hit him over the head with a frying pan? I'm sure many times. But she stuck with him. And, you know, in this day and age when we're trying to define what is marriage, any two people who can stay married on common goals for 40 years, you got to give them credit for it.
That's very true. You know, the movie says, kind of a slogan of the movie, it's behind the headlines, beyond the sound bites, beyond the slogan. So when people walk out, and I will tell you, one of the things I didn't know in the movie, I mean, I always thought that, you know, Hillary found herself to be the partner of a very aggressive politician who was going to make his way to the presidency once he met John Kennedy. And you sort of have that piece of the story in the film. But we do learn that she, in the movie, she sort of has one of her very close friends to this day, a woman named Betsy, who tells her at a very young age, you are going to be the first woman president. As you finish this film, do you get a sense that Hillary, even in her early days, said, this isn't just about Bill, this is going to be about me too?
Yes. Both of those moments in the film are sort of a foreshadow or a prophecy or a calling or a monumental point in their careers. Each of them saw that they could be president someday, but they came to the conclusion they needed each other to do it. If they had gotten divorced in the 80s, when it was very possible, neither one of them would have been president.
Good point. And by the way, suppose she had left him or kicked him out after the affairs during White House years. How would she have been? I mean, do you think she stayed with? Is that part of it to say, oh, no, you're not going to ruin my future?
You mean, why didn't she kick him out after the?
Yeah, I mean,
was it just because
she wanted to keep the relationship together? Is it about that? Or did she see her own future and knew that that could not be a part of it?
Both of those are true. Absolutely. She saw her future that if she was part of the first couple to ever divorce in the White House, that would have stained her forever. Plus, I don't think she could have kicked the president out. She would have had to left. You know, it was technically his house, yeah, for the record. But she loves Chelsea. One of the things we show early in the film is her mother didn't really have a great marriage, but she stuck it out no matter what, and she imparted that to Hillary. Yeah, never. You never surrender your family. You never give up. And one of the things I thought was true in the second debate, they asked Donald Trump to say something nice about Hillary, and he said something that was right on. She's a fighter. She never gives up. She never surrenders. Absolutely. You can defeat her. Obama defeated her. She can make a mistake and lose, but she never gives up. She never surrenders. And there are many women who probably stick in marriage for a long time because they feel to divorce would be failure, and they don't want to admit failure. They want to stick it out, and she's done that. She's relentless.
And she said he has kids. What a compliment. Bill Baber, the writer and director of the film Clinton Inc. Behind Closed Doors, The True Story of an American Dynasty. It is playing now. You know what? See, it'll probably play after the elections, but see it now. See it before you cast your vote, because, you know, it'll either enhance what you're thinking, or it'll anger you, or you'll react the way it reacts. As you said, Bill, people will react however they react, depending on their own leanings. That's what a film should allow us to do. And I appreciate your time in talking about it. The website, by the way, is clintoninkthemovie.com. Trump.com. Any future movie coming out? Or are you getting ready for Trump the movie? Is that next?
I don't know what that'll be rated. So,
good point. Not for the kids. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You know, it's always very depressing when we pick up a newspaper or watch the news and we get a story of something sad that happens in our city, whether it's a moment of violence or a death or anything that just kind of gives a feeling of being a down feeling about living in the city of Chicago, especially when you live in the city of Chicago, as my guess is most of you who listen to this podcast do. You love this city. And it's very frustrating when you don't find other people taking a moment to take the difficult moments, but always have a moment of pride in where they live. We're going to talk about that a little bit with an endeavor, which is being known as, if you will, hashtag Chicago Proud. And to talk about that and kind of really the instigators of this in the city as it begins to grow, we're catching them at the beginning of all of this. Alderman James Kappelman of the 46th Ward was brought into this by none other than Steve Dale, WGN Radio's own Steve Dale, and the king of Steve Dale's Pet World and all things animals. But it's not just animals. He actually reaches in so many different areas because he's been around so darn long. Alderman Kappelman, Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Paul.
Steve, I think this actually began with you. Fair enough, in terms of you hearing about something and a light bulb went off for you.
Yes, so I was doing what so many of us do, and I was just looking on Facebook, and there was a post about someone, unfortunately, getting hit by a car, not seriously, but seriously enough that this person was down and out on the street. And to protect this person from traffic waiting for the emergency vehicles to arrive, these pedestrians surrounded the person, and on Facebook it was hashtag Chicago Pride, and it occurred to me at that point, for all the reasons you so articulately said, I'm sick and tired of turning on late night TV and watching Jimmy Fallon poke fun at our city or hearing Donald Trump do the same. I mean, we've made national news over and over. And, you know, I understand that there are serious issues that need to be addressed, for sure. But also, we have a great city. And I thought there is so much to be proud of. And that's when I went to my friend Alderman Kappelman and I said, what do you think? Do you think it's a good idea for us to stress some of the positives that go on here every single day that are never going to be covered by traditional media? There's no time, there's no space, but we can cover this in social media and also take control of our own identity.
And so you went to the alderman, and Alderman Kappelman, he came to you, and actually you became the conduit to get this word around to your 49 other colleagues.
Yes, and oddly enough, when I did, all of them were very excited about it. We have 50 wards, and with 50 wards, each ward is incredibly different. The 46th ward is just directly east of the 47th ward, and they're just totally different set of dynamics. But everybody from all walks of life loved it.
And so you got to, and by the way, did the mayor get involved in this at all? Did either Steve or James, did either of you talk to Mayor Emanuel, who I'm sure will love this as well?
I reached out to the mayor's office, and they loved it as well. They think it's a great idea. Even the mayor's talk today, the budget address, it was all very positive of many people working together to make a better Chicago.
And Steve, it's not just about, you know, you said this began with sort of a car accident situation, but really, as we're promoting this now, because people listening to this, you know, are saying, hey, it's a great idea. What do you want me to do? This is not about waiting for some moment in the city where somebody gets hit by a car and you go, ah, this is Chicago. That's not what we're talking about. You want people to see some good things happening, but also just identifying spots in the city, things they attend or they visit, or a dog beach, or as you said to me, Steve, just the best taco or hot dog you've had.
Well, all of that is correct. So, yeah, I mean, we can wait for extraordinary moments like the Cubs winning the World Series. Yes, when that happens, and it will, hashtag Chicago Proud. But it can be in your own home. Your kid comes back and gets an A. That I'd be proud, you know, hashtag Chicago proud, maybe take a picture of the A and put that in social media. Yes, absolutely. The best Chicago hot dog you've had or best taco that you've had in Pilsen. And that's the thing too, because I begin to talk about this, I can begin to mention neighborhoods. But well, Chicago is really unique because we are still a city of neighborhoods. And as the alderman said, the 46th Ward is in many ways different than the 47th or 45th Ward, but we're all the same. We are all Chicagoans, and we all have a whole lot to be proud of. So whether it's in our homes, on our block, in our ward, or in our city, it doesn't matter. Big thing, little thing, it's a big thing to you. That's all that counts. And hashtag Chicago proud, and hopefully it will catch on, and we can then take control of our own messaging.
You know, Alderman, one of the things that occurs to me, and I know everything takes money, but, you know, this is such a, I think, such a great idea that I start to see posters. You know, you go to the airport and you see sister city flags and whatever. But it's the kind of thing where I can start seeing posters of a street vendor, of a business owner, of a kid in a park, and just posters up around the city in different places that simply say hashtag Chicago proud. And it begins to brand the city. I mean, that it could and probably should go in that way, right?
And it would also be great for tourism.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So does
I
that mean
right
so-
now the tourists? I don't know. There are a couple of websites that say essentially you take your life into your own hands if you go to Chicago. Well, that's not good. I'm not sure that's accurate, and that's certainly not good for Chicago and not good for tourism. And there's so much negativity out there now. I want to turn the conversation around, and we should have control over the conversation. But what tourists think of our city really does matter economically, but it also makes us feel better about our city. Not only what tourists think, but what we think of our city, you know?
Yeah.
All this negative news becomes to at some point to become a burden, I think, you know. It's like a weight on our shoulders, and you turn on the news and the weight gets to be from 10 pounds to 20 pounds to 100 pounds, and it grows every single day.
Steve, I just want to just clarify. You said when this began, it began as hashtag Chicago pride. You felt that Chicago proud was more applicable. Just what was the thinking there?
The alderman can better answer,
oh, okay.
I think.
Well, there are a lot of thoughts behind it, but one thing is that, you know, I'm a gay man, and we always, in today's National Coming Out Day, we talk about, you know, being proud of who we are, but I didn't want it to be attached to an LGBT thing. We wanted to be more focused on people from all different backgrounds, all different sexual orientations, all different ages and sizes. That's having it Chicago Proud more encompassed that.
You know, and by the way, I have to tell you, when I saw Chicago Pride, that is exactly what I thought. That I said, what a great idea, you know, for the LGBT community. And so that's why I wanted to ask that question, because I thought exactly what your concern was. Not that it's a bad thing, but just that it becomes
a more limited thing. So it's certainly not bad, but we want to really broaden it. I mean, if we're going to be proud, we want everyone to jump in.
So how do we do it? Let me get each of your perspectives on this. So our listeners now say, hey, it's a great idea, but am I going out and taking pictures? So Alderman, I'll start with you. What do you want people to do to try and get this movement going? And maybe because you have the ear of each alderman, so that the alderman can say, hey, this thing is really growing. We need to do something more.
So each day we are encouraging everyone, and aldermen and the mayor included, to say something, even a small thing, that makes them proud Chicagoans. So I'm not from Chicago. I'm from Houston, and I was a Franciscan friar. I came here, but when I left the order, I decided to stay here because of CTA. And so today, when I was getting on the train, I saw this little four-year-old going through the turnstile who's very comfortable with the train. And that's a unique thing about Chicago. Here he was racing through the turnstile saying, up, up, and away. I mean, he was Superman. And thought that was so nice. Those even simple things is what we need to all talk about, that lifts us up. And when we're lifted up, we have a more positive mindset, and we have a more positive mindset, we're going to be nice to one another and civil.
So did you take a picture and post that? And if not, then that's the kind of thing we should begin to do.
I didn't. And that's because I didn't have time to get the permission from the parent.
Ah, okay.
But typically, that's the kind of stuff I love doing.
So, and there you are, a fryer who enjoyed the CTA and stayed here in the city, which is great. Steve, you're a fry cook. No, I'm kidding.
Yes.
Or you enjoy things out of deep fryers. So do you have a similar story?
Sure. Chicago is a great restaurant town, and we are an amazing restaurant town. And
you post every night on Facebook, you are at some other restaurant. I kind of wonder whether you ever cook at home, but you are always somewhere and enjoying a margarita, whatever it is.
Yes.
And you are exactly living what you're talking about.
I was so honored. I actually did hashtag not only Chicago Proud, but I was like thrilled. It was the honor of my career. The recent Friends of Animal Care and Control benefit, they named a margarita for me called Meow-garita.
It was
a thrill. Have you ever had a margarita named for you?
No, but at the Auditorium Theater, there's a drink named for my dog.
Well, that's pretty good. I love that.
Yeah,
so that would be the kind of thing.
I am proud of that.
Pardon me, Paul?
I'm good. Well, I want to get that as long as you mention that. It's called Cafe Mertz. And so if you go to the Auditorium Theater, which is going to make me Chicago proud now, it is a New Orleans coffee with chicory plus macadamia nut liqueur. It's called Cafe Mertz. And so you see, Steve, when it comes to actually all three of us, right, when it comes to honoring our dogs, that makes us Chicago proud.
You bet. Yes. You adopt a kitty from Animal Care and Control. The flowers come up on a day you don't expect it to, or we have three sunny days in a row like we've just had. I mean, it can be the most incidental thing, but it isn't to you. That's the thing. Something that just makes you smile, something that just makes you proud, and whether it be in your own home or whether it be something larger, I know that all three of us, as it happens, I'm aware, are going to the Black Ensemble Theater. They're having their 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
This is an amazing organization that has broken ground not only for theater in Chicago but across the country in many ways. I mean, that makes me Chicago proud. I mean, I could go on, and any of us can who live in this city forever, about what makes us proud. And it doesn't matter what it is. If it makes you proud, here's what you do. If you have a smartphone, if you'd like, take a picture. If not, just write it out. Write it out in Facebook. Write it out in Instagram. Write it out in Twitter. Whatever social media platforms you like. Whatever social media platforms you use. And then simply post it. That's all there is to it. People may share it. They may not share it. Who knows? It's social media. But so far, I've been doing this a while. I know the alderman has. And people do like it. They do share it. And they do get it.
And let's hope that our listeners now will hear this. And let this be your first Chicago Proud moment, that you've heard this. You've agree with it, and so you go right to your phones and put something on there on the social media platform of your choice and hashtag it.
Yes.
Chicago Proud. Alderman James Kaplan of the 46th Ward and Steve Dale. I should mention your radio show every Sunday morning at 6:30. That makes us Chicago proud. And the fact that you're 157 years old makes me Chicago proud. Thank you both for being with me. I appreciate it. Let's all be Chicago proud. Thanks, gentlemen. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.